to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 207. This is a podcast that explores all facets of Linux, whether it's hardware, software, news, anything that interests us. And by us, I mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and my good friend, the door-to-door geek, a.k.a. Stephen McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Supercoop. I'm going to say going good only because if I say it's going bad, something tells me the universe might test me on that. Work is okay. Home is okay. It's just this initial stress. Next week, we're going to Disney for a week. And I tried to explain to my wife the last time we went to Disney how it's not actually a vacation for me.
Right.
Because I get to watch everyone spend all my money frivolously and without any thought behind it. So it's a little bit stressful for me, and I don't think she got it.
Yeah. My wife is trying to get us to go to, I got boys a little bit younger than you, as you know, and there's two things I hate in life, spending money and waiting in line. And from what I understand, that's pretty much all you do when you go to Disneyland or Disney World, Universal Studios or whatever. I would suffer through, I think, going to Legoland or whichever one of them has that new Nintendo thing. I think that would be neat. But at the same time, you know, $19 bottles of water out in the sun, you know, $38 cheeseburgers. Yeah. Just not about that life.
Yeah. Well, the deal with Universal Studios was signed for the Nintendo Land. I don't think they honestly expect it to be production ready for like 2 years.
Fine.
So you have time to contemplate in your suffrage.
Sounds great.
I will say one of the things she got, because she literally spent a lot of money already in the preparation for this and buying things ahead of time, like meals. But one of the things she also bought was 3 fast passes every day for each of us, which means at any point in time, we can walk up to a ride next to the line, press a button, get a ticket, and the ticket will say, like, come back in 40 minutes, 50 minutes, 2 hours, whatever the time is on the ticket. And then if you come back at that time, you basically wait in no line whatsoever. So the logic is the big, huge, popular rides will get the fast passes for, and for the rides with the 20 to 30 minute wait, we just wait.
So in gaming terms, the fast pass purchase is much like an in-app purchase or DLC.
It is absolutely DLC, and I do believe we are allowed to buy unlimited fast passes during the day. But one of the things that they didn't know that I know that they know that I know was last time we were there, we sat through a timeshare presentation from the official Disney company.
Oh, God, I know.
Which I had to inform him 3 seconds into it. I work for the government. We have no money. We're not signing anything. We're not spending any money. We're here for information. So say what you want, when you want, how you want, but don't expect anything to be signed at any point in time.
Right.
But I also added, we're not going to sit through this unless you give us 4 express fast passes for each of us, which was 16 express fast passes, which is you just walk up to the ride and say, I'm getting on right now.
Right.
And they just let you right through the line. So we did that last time, and the kids definitely appreciated it. And here's a big plus. When we went and got the lecture from the guy, the kids went to a play area and had a blast the whole time. So it was good for them on both accounts. And we got free food because I made sure that they fed us and they brought me drinks.
Yeah, what was it? maybe 10, 12 years ago. First time that my wife and I went to Vegas with her parents and her sister. I think her sister's... her sister and whatever male companion she took with her got looped into going to a timeshare seminar, and the whole time, even her parents were just like, don't do it, it's a scam. And my wife was like, oh, well, they'll give us this. And I was like, nope, we're not going, because I know all about it. And sure enough, she goes, yeah, all we had to do was give them a blank check when we got in there, and we had to sit there and listen for 2 hours, and they ended up giving us, like, but they say $100, but it's like $100 asterisk. It's a $100 chip for whatever awful casino, off-strip casino that it's in. And then right. And then you're done, but then guess what? You step outside and you got to pay your way back to the strip. So it's like a $40 cab ride to get back. Yeah, it's just terrible.
I do believe there is a certain person where a timeshare is actually a decent thing for their lifestyle.
Sure.
But I believe for 90% of the people out there, it's just a, you know, you're just gifting somebody some money for free.
Mm-hmm.
A really quick Linux thing I got to say up front that I don't want to say I feel bad about, but I feel absent. I feel there's a hole in me right now because none of us went to Linux Fest Northwest. And I think I said it right that time because I always get it backwards. Okay. And I'm going to say right now there's a pledge. I'm pledging right now. Next year I am going, period. No matter what, I am going. Just to see you, Martin, Aaron, Chuck, Josh, all those guys again, but also to see everybody else again and to just experience Washington State. I mean, unbelievable beauty up there and unbelievably nice people who are sometimes chemically enhanced.
Well, but sometimes the, I'm just going to say, yeah. Anyway, yeah, it was definitely a time for a little tear to roll down my cheek when I started getting those Google notifications going, a year ago, you were doing this. And it's just photos of, you know, us doing all sorts of stuff. I was like, oh, man. And I got a big roar of laughter recently from telling everyone the story of our first year there where I got us those $250 worth of gift cards for complaining about the guy at the front desk.
Well, I mean, he was in the wrong. There's no way to
absolutely put it. If you don't remember that story, look for Linux Fest Northwest 2015 recap episode. Go check it out. It'll be worth a listen. But I'll definitely go. I've already done a few good trips this year. I got a couple more to go, and because I'm reengaged in an old hobby and looking forward to exploring that a bit more. But definitely still very much into open source. So yeah, I'll commit to going next year too.
Very cool, very cool. Another bit of Linux news I'm just going to throw out there, and I'll try to make sure there's a link in the notes. I remember DistroWatch. I want to say, without tooting my own horn, because that's almost perverse. I don't really hear a lot of other websites mentioning sites like DistroWatch, and I've always tried to go out of my way to push sites that know more than me that I benefit from, and I think that everyone else can benefit from. And without a shadow of a doubt, DistroWatch has been one of those sites. Well, your friend in mind, Bruce Patterson,
BP,
a guy who excels at his job.
Right.
He basically does the audio version of the DistroWatch Weekly. Every week on that website, they have breakdowns of new distros added to their list, distros taken off their list, reviews, and some news. And Bruce basically takes that textual posting and puts it in audio form. He asked me to start to join him basically on like a weekly basis, which because of our timing and our schedules, I can't do it every week, and sometimes he can't either. But we've done at least 4 or 5 episodes now, and where we basically just talk Linux stuff. And in typical me and Bruce fashion, our amount of pre-show organization is not much, but I think it actually ends up being pretty good content most of the time because we're engaged. I cannot really say this because, I mean, I can't say it enough. Bruce is one of the smarter guys I've ever met. He's also one of the nicer guys I've ever met. He also has, I think, a particular gift of communication where anybody can talk to him. And if you can't talk to him, there's something wrong with you.
Well, he's a rare breed in that he's a great storyteller and he's a great technical mind. So when he's it's that communication style that he has when telling stories, and I've heard some great stories from him, but I can see that confidence, that cadence, that capability bleed over into him talking about whatever it is in his professional career and his love for open source software that really helps create something very unique. So if you've never, if you're in the Linux whatsoever, you should have stumbled across DistroWatch at one time or another. If you've never listened to the podcast, I would urge you to, despite the fact that Dor's on it and that he might be lowering the quality of the show, still listen to it for Bruce.
Well, I have a alternative available then. I actually was able to talk Bruce to doing a weekly podcast on Podnuts with Tracy Holtz. Bruce is a passionate sports fellow who actually worked in sports journalism in one shape, way, or form for more than a couple of years. So he is on the show, Sports Nuts, where their two driving passions are hockey. They both know football. They both like football and baseball. So if you want to hear Bruce without me and with another guy, because honestly, I think two of my greatest achievements in owning Podnuts is getting Tracy Holtz to do a weekly show and to get Bruce Patterson on board and then to get Jonathan Nadeau as well. There's only a couple more like achievements I think that I can do before I reach to me like the pinnacle.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, I would definitely urge you guys to check that out because Tracy is also very passionate about many things, and sports is one of them. Me, I'm gonna be honest. If I listen to that show, I might listen to an episode or two just to hear the two of them talk. But I don't follow any sports whatsoever. No ball, no puck, nothing.
Well, I could care less about hockey. Baseball to me is the most boringest sport next to bowling, maybe. And that's about all I know about. Sports, except I'm probably going to buy FIFA 18 for the Nintendo Switch just because I've never owned one before. So just to try something different.
FIFA is basically Brick Breaker, but with individual characters.
Yeah, yeah. I can definitely go for that.
That's how I play it.
But I dog food. I believe people who don't dog food are ignorant people and they deserve to be treated ignorantly. Just saying. So everything that comes out on Podnuts, I listen to unequivocally every single episode from beginning to end, now and forever, because I have to make sure quality gets maintained. So I listen to all of them. I don't like sports, but I definitely like their banter back and forth. Good stuff.
Nice.
And I'll say this show is, I'm going to say, brought to you by Podnutsians. We have a Patreon now, podnuts.com/podnuts. That's for the entire network. If you go to podnuts.com on the right side, I believe you can subscribe to donate $1 per each month. We lost a important revenue stream, and I'm just trying to get back to where we were at. And if we could do better, that would be even more fantastic. Even if we only had 1% of the people go to that $1 a month, we would easily recoup any lost money. We are still right now hovering around less than 0.5%. So we're not there yet to the number of people. I'll also say the other company I like to mention, and I'm going to keep mentioning them until they're unbelievably successful and snobbish and they only think about money, but the trick is that's never going to happen, is Think Penguin. Very few companies out there that are actual companies do everything in their power to look out for you, the end user. And Think Penguin, I think, is one of those companies that actually strives for personal freedom. If you cherish your personal freedom, you want to be private, and you want to run hardware that supports those same morals, I highly encourage you go over to thinkpenguin.com. And if you want a coupon code, just shoot me an email at podcast@lenoxfortherestofus.com and I'll hit you back.
Yeah. And once again, that is patreon.com/podnuts. Or if you just go to podnuts.com/support, you will see the Patreon, not only for the entire network, but also for a couple of individual shows. So yeah, if you do enjoy any of the content, which of course is and forever will be free, that we put on the network here for in the form of these podcasts. See what you can do. See if it's worth enough to you to help support us in this way, because we've used funds in the past for a variety of things throughout the network, not just to benefit. I would say a small percentage to benefit. I mean, a very small percentage, mind you, to benefit those who contribute content to the show. But the majority of it goes back into creating content or for prize support. Because, Dor, how many microcomputers have you given away?
Well, I can tell you at the last Ohio Linux Fest, it had to be 15 of them, I'll say.
Right.
And Rich had pi zeros, and he had to give away every bit of, I would say, 15 of them.
Yeah, very nice. So yeah, if you find the content worthwhile and it's something that you are able to do, obviously some people aren't in a position to do so, but at least check it out as an option that you can now do to help support the network, because it really does help.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's just dive right in, considering I say dive because I recently went to a water park, had a blast with the family, aside from the sister-in-law, of course. That's a whole other 15-minute opening that we'll just skip over. If you have that sister-in-law, or for the female listeners, brother-in-law, that you just can't stand, you know what I'm talking about.
I think everybody has one of them.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, this first article, very, sounds very, very cool. Go ahead and take it away, Dora.
Well, it's cool, but it's also retro, and it's the kind of thing I don't know how many people actually take advantage of. That's the disclaimer. This is an article by Stephen J. Von Nichols, which I seriously, once again, have to say, I know I said this maybe 2 or 3 years ago, maybe one of the best names. It's just smooth. It just sounds good. He did an article on ZDNet titled, "One of the First Computer Games is Born Again in Open Source." Author of the book The Cathedral and the Bazaar, Eric S. Raymond, in a lot of ways, I'm going to say a proclaimed open source advocate and author. This guy literally writes code and writes books and is a activist. Does a lot of really good things for the open source people. He basically went in and took the code for one of the very, very first video games called Colossal Cave and redid it basically from the ground up. And what I mean is he then implemented the exact same things in open source code and basically published for everyone to download, play with, and enjoy. These are the kind of things that we have to remember. A lot changes throughout time. A lot of behaviors also change. Back when computers were very, very new, the idea was when you bought the computer, you got the code along with it. And once you did, the code was yours to do whatever you want with. Very shortly thereafter, code was considered freely distributable and ownable by anybody. One of the friends I say of the network, John Mad Dog Hall, used to basically take code that was on ribbons, and he had a method to duplicate that code. And what he did was then he would keep duplicating it and then sell the rolls for enough money for beer. And that was how he survived college. Then I would say around the 80s, code started to become intellectual property. One of the most disgusting words, in my humble opinion, IP, intellectual properties, to where now things are slowly becoming more open. We have the success, crazy success of Red Hat. We have Microsoft Azure hosting unbelievable numbers of Linux cloud stuff. We have open source licensing being very competitive with a lot of different products. There's no way it's destroying or killing it or, you know, but it is being competitive on a lot of things. So it's good to see people taking older code bases and refreshing them and then releasing them as free software, open source software, because the more software that's out there, the easier it is for somebody else to learn how to program. If the only way we learned programming was by paying for schools, sitting down and learning the basics of that programming language because there was no code to copy from, I don't think computers would be even remotely as far as they are right now.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, this is very cool. I mean, back from 1976, I was 4 years old when this game actually first came out, and it was available on the PDP-10 mainframe. Mm. If that tells you, and if that's not an indicator of age, I don't know what is.
I would have just been... I'm doing a show. Sorry, my son definitely had to come tell me something.
That's okay.
Okay. Interrupted one more time. Yeah, love hearing stuff about these retro games, because even though I was born after this, I had a lot of older cousins that really had a lot of this available for me as I was coming up. So I think that really accelerated my understanding of a lot of this retro technology. I told a story. It's been over a year now, but I was helping my dad clean out the garage, and I found our very first family computer, which was a Commodore 128, which I still have here. And there will be a day vacation I'll set aside, and I have to locate a monitor to use with it, but boot it up and play with it for the day, because I love keeping around some older computers, basically anything that doesn't run Windows, because I could care less. But like, who wants to boot up, you know, 3.1 just to look at it? I can imagine what it looked like, and that's all I need.
Yeah, I understand. I will say the oldest computer I ever owned as a family was unfortunately a HP. It was one of the first multimedia computers. I don't want anything to do with that box. That box caused so much pain and aggravation. And it took me years and years and years and years and years to figure out what the actual cause of the aggravation was. And it wasn't Windows itself. It was we did not have central AC. All we had was a window AC unit. And our electricity in our house was the old round fuses you had to, you know, put in when they blew.
Oh, wow.
And any time somebody turned that air conditioning on, it would cause a surge, a spike, or whatever through the entire mm-hmm. house and cause a... And every time it did that, it would cause an error on that hard drive.
Weird.
And it took me literally like 4 years to figure that out. But once I figured it out, I went out and got a good surge protector. But just because of all that anguish that put me through for years, I want nothing to do with that original computer anymore.
Yeah, the suffering is real.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the times we live in definitely beg for an article like our next one, 10 private search engines that do not track you. You're seeing a lot of this privacy-focused stuff come out, and some of it, unfortunately, is going to be cash grabs for software solutions. And so be very careful. Take everything you do read with a grain of salt. But I've already used a couple of these on this list, and I'm sure Door has too. And we'll just quickly name off the 10 search engines, because some of them sound hardcore and interesting. The first one, of course, being DuckDuckGo. That's a given. We've spoken about that before on this show, and probably also AAA, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. Number two being Wolfram Alpha, of course, very widely known in this community. Number three, Start Page by IxQuick is a powerful search engine which provides accurate results while protecting your searches and avoiding tracking your steps. That sounds interesting. Looks like it sets up a proxy server by default. Well, that's interesting. Okay. Privately, the word private and then L-E-E. There's nothing much to talk about privately. Okay, then I'll move on to number five. Number five. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yippee. Yippee. Y-I-P-P-Y allows you to manually filter the results according to categories and flag an inappropriate result. Okay, so this is interesting too. So Yippee sounds like one that you could kind of go in and maybe through trial and error kind of lock down to maybe be used by your kids. That seems neat. Number six being Hulby, private search engine that delivers instant searches while not tracking your location history. These all sound the same. Gibiru. Yep, is a fully uncensored yet encrypted search engine that prevents data leaks to third parties. Okay, cool. It works faster than most private search engines because it uses Google custom search to see that I like, as much as I like DuckDuckGo, it is, does it use Bing or Yahoo? Well, I guess Bing uses Yahoo, right? So it's Yahoo based, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. So and I guess that's because, I mean, I wish I were a little more awake to think of a good analogy. Well, okay, imagine Google as that one guy at the bar that does know everything, but imagine Bing search / Yahoo as the guy that thinks he knows everything is probably right about half the time, but usually just sends you out a bunch of wild goose chases. That's why I don't like using Yahoo search for anything, period, for many, many years. But Gibiru apparently uses Google Custom Search to provide its search, but removes all tracking methods followed by Google. Very interesting. Number 8, Disconnect Search, just like Gibiru, okay? Disconnect Search uses search assistance from major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing, but it does not track your online activities or search for IP addresses. Okay. Number 9, Lukol, L-U-K-O-L, uses a proxy server to give you customized search results from Google using its own enhanced custom search. Okay. Well, like the sound of that. And 2, Metager. M-E-T-A-G-E-R lets you make confidential, untraceable searches that leave no footprints for when you need to look up a Google map for someone that you might want to visit in the night. That is not in the description.
But it should
but it should be. Oh, man.
And if you notice, the very last line of that one is that the default language for that is in German. Ah,
Deutsche. Very nice. Okay, yeah. This prohibits third parties or advertisers to target you for any ads or any malicious attacks. Man, that sounds interesting. Yeah, see, I think that, because, I mean, even... It takes some good articles like this, and I say good article because this seems to be pushing us in the direction of a few possible solutions which could fit the use case for, I think, many different types of people. And just as I'm sure a lot of you know, because anybody who listens to basically a podcast, especially any technology podcasts, should be at least a little bit tech savvy. You're probably that person in your group of friends or family that they come to with their computer problems, etc. So for those who do want to explore this avenue of being a little bit more safe and or private online, having someone like this in your back pocket, or at least testing some of these solutions out that you can then turn around and recommend based on your experience, would be valuable. And in the meantime, you're just finding yourself something a little bit more, because, I mean, I'm not trying to be tinfoil hat here, but you know just as well as I do that there's a possibility, however remote, that this data that now it's being collected can be potentially used against you in a variety of ways in the future. I mean, you're, in medical searches based on symptoms you're experiencing, searching for recovery programs locally, you know, whatever. The possibilities are endless. And like I said, I'm not trying to scare anybody, and I'm not trying to get anybody to go onto these solutions. I'm just saying, hey, here's an option for you based on the current situation that we know of right now and that might be worse in the future. So I don't think it would hurt to at least explore some of these options. What do you think, Dor?
I cannot argue, but unfortunately, I think near the header and footer of the page is an indicator of just how serious, quote-unquote, people are taking this. I do think there's a certain number of people that really do take this serious, but it's not really hitting any kind of mass number of people, because you can clearly see that this article has been shared on Twitter a whopping 20 times, and it's literally never been shared on Facebook.
Oh, and it's almost a year old, too. It came out in 2 days. It came out a year ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
I saw this link thanks to Scott Moulton on Twitter. He posted it. It was actually originally on Facebook, but he then republublicized it to Twitter. So whenever he posts something, like you said in the beginning about worrying about clickbait articles, because he posted it, I knew this was kind of safe. And then when I saw the logo for this website, codingsec.net, I knew they were serious, because that's a really scary looking rabbit.
It almost looks like the rabbit from Donnie Darko, and then a bunch of Celtic / kanji text surrounding it in almost like a flotation device. Not ominous whatsoever
at all. I will say, I think DuckDuckGo uses a hybrid approach, but I do believe Google is the actual back end to DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo is the one to go to, I think, for popularity's sake. It says here they have more than 10 million searches a day. And to be quite honest, the more people doing searches on a search engine enables it to know what people are looking for, thus rank stuff higher. So they're the default one when people say they want a private search.
Well, okay, but seriously, though, how many of those millions of searches per day are literally just bouncing off of Yahoo Answers?
I don't know. Hopefully not a lot. But
okay.
And I'll say, Wolfram Alfra, I never even thought about being a private search engine. I knew it was a search engine, but I had no idea it was a private one. So that makes me feel better about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the one, to be honest, I'm liking aesthetically and the results don't seem to be too bad is Start Page, the third one down. And I really do encourage people, go to startpage.com, load it, and then do side-by-side searches with that in Google. They are sometimes different results, but most of the time when I click through, they're not bad results.
Okay.
So that's the one I'm playing with now. I will say DuckDuckGo also has a Android app where it cannot replace Google search on your device, but you can put widgets on your home screen. You can use it, and it does work pretty good. I will say it doesn't matter. There's still certain things I'm going to have to use Google for,
mm-hmm.
but it's the Google centric things. Like when I ask it to set a the reminder or to send a text message, which I do via what is essentially the Google search. So whenever I do something now, I just take that split second and stop and think, is this a Google thing or not? And if it isn't, I use a different search engine, and it's been going on for about a week, and so far Start Page I'm liking. It's one of those things I don't know if I'm going to stick with, but for right now I'm using it.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and start the next one, Dora? I need to step out for just a moment.
Gotcha. The next one is actually two links. One of them is a configurator and the other one is how to install. For the longest time, I have believed if you want the most performance and the most stability out of your machine, you really do not want what is called a 3D composited desktop. Whenever you introduce complexity, there is an inherent and unarguable fact that with complexity rises greater greater possibility for errors to happen. Also, 3D composited desktops literally use more resources on your computer. Now, I will absolutely agree with today's modern computers. If you got an i7 with 32 gigs of RAM and, you know, running whatever video card, the measured difference in how many resources are being used versus a compositing and a non-compositing desktop, you probably won't even notice. Okay. But not everyone has new hardware, number one. Number two, if you have to install third-party drivers like NVIDIA or AMD, there is a chance you're also going to see more issues because you're, again, loading more drivers on your OS. I try everything I buy to have Intel video cards in it just for stability's sake. I'm not trying to run a game at 60 FERPS. I'm, in fact, not even trying to run a game. I don't have time for games, as it turns out. So I'm running my desktops as production machines to do work on them. And one of the lighter desktops that I find that are non-compositing, like quickly for example, compositing desktops, GNOME, Unity, KDE, aka everything pretty, everything shiny, everything curvy, everything with animations in them, is compositing desktops. So they're going to be the ones that I try to actively avoid at every turn just because it's going to take more processors up. And like my main rig here is literally like a 7-year-old IBM ThinkPad that I'm broadcasting from right now. And I don't want a bloaty desktop sitting on top of it. So the one I selected with a little influence from Knucklehead Tech, long time friend, was i3. I was using Awesome Window Manager forever, and it did everything I wanted it to do, period, bar none, no questions asked. It did. But then I also noticed, because he told me to go look, and there has not been a meaningful, I believe his words was, a meaningful update to the Awesome Window Manager since 2008. And there hasn't been an actual, like a normal update to Awesome Window Manager. I believe it was until 2013. So he said, why don't you load something that at least has been updated? So I loaded i3. The good thing is a huge number of the controls are, if not identical, they're at least close enough to where they were very quick to learn. What I did was for like the first couple of days, I just had my default web page be to a cheat sheet on the basic controls for the i3 window manager. There is no curved edges. There is no shiny stuff going on. There is no animation in anything that happens. It's just a window manager. And thus, to be honest, I get more screen real estate back. I have blanket controls over my windows to where I can have them tile, I can have them cascade, or I can have them float. Floating windows are what we're all used to, where you can easily overlay windows over top one another. And it can be done in this desktop. All you have to do is just hit the Windows key Shift and Enter to shift back and forth from that mode. The best thing about the window manager to me is it has built into it called D menu, which is just Windows key and D, and you can start typing, and on the very top you'll see a list of applications that match what you're typing. So if you know the name of what you're looking for, you can easily just hit the Windows key and D, F-I-R, and then you'll see Firefox right there. Hit Enter, and it loads. I am enjoying this window manager, and I can tell you for the foreseeable future, this is the one that I'm going to be using.
Is this the one that Josh uses at work?
Yeah, this is the one that he...
Yeah.
I don't want to say swears by, but this is the one that he prefers.
Yeah, because the more I looked at it, the more I realized that the way you were explaining it, and then I remembered his explanation and looking at the pictures, I was like, I think this is what he was talking, because he uses it for multi-system monitoring, correct?
Yeah, it's very easy to tile multiple, like, terminal windows, browser windows, right, file manager, without having to drag and click stuff around. Yeah, the other reason I like this is it is the kind of desktop you can do 99% of the things you need to do in the OS and never touch the mouse.
Uh-huh.
I can do everything on the keyboard with honestly very simple commands that are not complex or hard to remember. They're very basic.
And I'm sure it came to you after just a little bit of use too, right?
Well, it was very much like the awesome window manager in its keyboard bindings. Mm-hmm. And because it's one of these kinds of desktops, it's infinitely customizable. So if I wanted to really, I could go into the config file and change all of those key bindings to match what I wanted them to match. But I figured I'd rather learn how they do it.
Okay, that sounds cool.
Yeah, and the next app in the list, to be honest, I haven't had a chance to load. This is called the i3 Configure. What its goal is to be is to help new people with i3 to help set up your own custom configuration on what's going on. And like right now, I have the default one where on the bottom of my screen, it's basically as high as it needs to be is what I want to say. Very small bar at the bottom where it tells me my IPv6 address, how much free disk space is on my main drive. Am I getting my address via DHCP? Is this through a VPN? Is my Wi-Fi up? Is my Ethernet up? If they are, what is the IP address? If there's a battery connected, is it charging, discharging? What is the percentage? What is my load? How heavy a load is my computer on right now? And then there's a date and time. And then there is some icons in the bottom right-hand corner. So I have all the information I need, and I swear it's taking up 10 times less space as it would on other desktops.
Wow, so pretty resource-like then too, huh?
Yeah, that's one of the gimmicks. Having my main computer being older, being almost as old as my youngest son, I don't want big, bloaty, heavy, fancy, animated desktops.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there. I wouldn't mind, like, I'm trying to think of, well, for anyone, I mean, if you think about the flashy stuff of from Ubuntu 5 to 10 years ago, you know, the animations for the windows appearing and disappearing, you know, so on and so forth, I now appreciate seeing that, but very subtly, like almost as if to say, like, you watch it and go, was that an animation or did it really just close? You know, something so subtle where it looked nice, but it wasn't flashy and it wasn't resource heavy. You know what I'm getting at? Right. Yeah, like that I like seeing, but yeah, anymore, really, I just want something that's going to work. And if a byproduct of that is that it's also super easy to use and looks nice, then it's just a win-win.
Yeah, I really came into how I feel about desktops maybe 4 years ago when I heard Linus Torvalds say the goal of the desktop, I believe he said desktop, it might have been the OS, was to get out of the way. The last thing I want is to have to memorize folder structures through configuration menus, through application menus, and hot corner this and right click and the go. I don't want to have to memorize that. I want the desktop literally to get the hell out of the way, as far out of the way as it possibly can, and just let me do what I need to do. I want to interact with applications. I don't want to interact with desktops. If I wanted to interact with desktops, I wouldn't install any applications, kind of thing. And I will say the other thing that I like about this desktop is almost like GNOME starts out, I believe, with two desktops and then it automatically adds them as sees fit. One of the little things it does is it starts off with just one desktop being shown on the bottom left-hand bar. And only when you hit the Windows key and the number to go to the actual desktop, it doesn't even show up in the list. So if I only have one desktop open and then I hit the Windows key and the number 5, it will only show two desktop icons for number 1 and number 5. So it doesn't get, you know, it doesn't show the desktop until it's being used or you're on it. So it's very easy to me to organize where your desktops are. And if you wanted to, you could actually in the config the name each desktop either with a letter symbol or a number, but I would encourage you not to try to use words just because of the lack of space. Yeah, but then of course I was upset when I heard that Linus uses GNOME.
Right.
So, you know, there goes that idea.
Well, hey, you know what? All that means is that ideas and preferences can evolve over time.
Well, and the beauty is it's a very personal choice. The worst question somebody can ask me is, what is the best desktop? Because there is no such thing. It is one of the most personal choices you can make. Mm-hmm. It's like asking somebody, who is your perfect mate? Everybody's going to have a different opinion. Just like if you ask somebody, what does it mean to be patriotic? Everyone has a different idea of what to do to make this country great. What do you do to make this country look good? What do you do to benefit this country? We all have different opinions about these things. And at least when I pick a desktop in Linux, I don't have to worry about retribution from other people.
Right.
Kind of thing. Yeah, because when I picked a politician, I picked a guy that was known to do drugs, and he didn't win.
Who has seen some stuff, right?
Well, he also was involved in triathletes. He also climbed, I believe it was, the highest points on 5 continents. He started a couple businesses that were still open and running. So he was successful in certain ways, but he had certain baggage that I think obviously was not good for his press, you know.
I got it. Okay. I did pop out. I'm sorry. Did we get? I mean, I know we talked about installing the window manager, but then did we also get to the one beneath that with the configure?
Yeah, they both went hand in hand. I still have not ran that configure. I want to run it on a box just so I can see what it is, but because the configuration file by default is just a text file, and it's almost like a Lua conky file, where I'm sure if you sit down, you could understand everything about it, but I know when I initially opened it up, 80% of what was in that file, I was not really sure what it was referencing. So this application is supposed to help with that.
Got it. Okay. Well, great. All right. Well, looks like that was our last topic for the week. Sure was great doing a show with you again, Dor.
Yes, sir.
It's been too long. Glad to be back in the saddle again.
Okay, well, I do have some good news for you. For you in particular,
oh, okay.
I'll say. I'm going to try something. It might be a complete train wreck. It might be a horrible decision, but I'm going to try it anyway. I'm going to go to FossCon August 28th, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, at the International House of Philadelphia, which is like a student exchange building where they hold the conference now. I'm going to have some people there with me. Among them is going to be Russ Winter is going to be there.
Uh-huh.
Bruce Patterson is going to make the trip down with his son to go see a Phillies game and be at the event. I'm pretty sure I have Jonathan Nadeau talked into coming down as well. And I'm going to attempt to do a full day conference covering live stream. I don't know how well it's going to go, but I'm going to try it because it's in a community building where they can't block cellular. They can't block Wi-Fi. So I should get a good signal. And I should have plenty of people to interview, and we should have plenty of things to talk about.
28th, that's like a Friday, right?
I'm going to guess Saturday.
Yeah, it's Friday or Saturday. I'll be in Vegas that week.
Oh, that must be nice.
Yeah.
And well, see, I'm showing the 28th as being a Monday, so I'm thinking it has to be on the 26th, which is a Saturday.
Wait, in August? I thought that the August. 20... Hold on here. I just had it up. Because I was... There we go.
Unless my calendar's wrong. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, it is a Monday. That's weird. yeah. Oh, I'll be in Vegas the week before.
That's cool. Yeah, it is August, August 26th. And Bruce and I are going to try to get Jonathan Simpson, the guy behind FossCon, on an episode of a Distro Watch so we can talk to him.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, getting any sort of behind the scenes, especially with event coordinators, would be very valuable. So, then, yeah, that sounds like a good show.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure at the event, I'm not going to be able to say three words to him without somebody coming up and telling him, you know, oh my God, we need you over here right now.
Pulling him away. Yes, yeah, dragging him away. Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely keep us in the loop on that. I think we still got a couple months away for that. But yeah, I'll be I'll be in Vegas on an annual business trip that I do every year. And man, you know, some people will say, oh, you're going to Vegas, aren't you excited? Not really. I don't like Vegas. I really don't.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Well, if you don't gamble, there isn't much there for you.
Yeah, I would play poker, but I have to, like, play it for, you know, 10 to 14 hours to get anything out of it, and I just can't do that on this trip. So it's just not going to be the most ideal thing, but that's fine. Might find a way to get out. I mean, I will have some fun. I know my boss is taking us out to a Brazilian steakhouse for dinner. That'll be great. Just keep that meat coming on the sword.
Oh, yeah.
Skip the bread. Skip the salad bar. Just the beef, please. Maybe some chicken.
Yeah.
All right. And as always, we do use the open broadcast software from obsproject.com in order to do some local recording to then upload later. But then also, for those viewing this live, that's the software that we use in order to produce the show live for our live listeners. Correct, Dor?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I don't know anything out there as easy as quite literally a child can use to broadcast Minecraft videos or something that, you know, you can literally do some really nice effects with. I think it's a good tool with good interface and good options.
Nice. Yeah, I've been looking into potentially doing some streaming, so I'll need to test this out and see if it'll be a good option for me. But if you're interested in, because if you have any sort of content that you're producing on a regular basis right now and perhaps are using a paid solution or in the planning stages of getting ready to create some sort of content, definitely head over to their websites, obsproject.com, and check out some of their solutions, because we've been using it for a while. If I remember correctly, that's also what the guys over at Linux Gamecast use, correct?
Knowing them, I would be it's so hard to know what they use. Knowing Ven, he uses some extremely delicate FFmpeg command piping it out to magic fairy dust, going back through a unicorn and a horse before it
can, and also a little bit of dark magic, and there's a ghost pepper sauce involved in there somewhere.
I'd say a lot of dark magic and some Lemmy.
Y'all can't have no Lemmy. Oh, fantastic. And although we've gotten some good emails in recently, which I have yet to fully review, we'll tackle that in the next episode. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, that number is still available for you to do so. Once again, it's 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Just keep it to a minute or two. Throw out any information you want, a question, a shout-out, whatever you'd like to throw out there into the ether for us. We will definitely listen to it, and then you may end up hearing it on an episode of a future show. And as a reminder, not to get Manifest Destiny into your minds here, but that is exactly how Dor got onto his first show. Because for those of you who may be newer listeners, Dor wasn't always in charge of everything that is Podnuts. It was previously Steve Cherubino. And I remember, gosh, it's been almost, we're creeping up on a 10-year anniversary for the whole network, right? It's damn close.
It has to be.
Yeah. I'll dig into that by the next time we talk. Anyhow, it's 8 or 9 years ago. Well, no, it was close to the inception of Podnuts Daily. The original version of that, I stumbled on it, and I was listening to it, and all of a sudden I heard this guy leave a voicemail, and his name was Steven something, and he stuttered a bit, but man, he had some good information. You could tell he was very passionate, and the way that Steve Cherubino responded to this guy's correspondence I thought was pretty cool. And I remember hearing the first voicemail and thinking, wow, anybody could just call in and do this, and not only will the host listen to it, but he'll play it on the show and then talk about it on the show. I thought that, and I never really encountered that before in my limited podcast experience. Well, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 more of these instances came up later, and then all of a sudden, Dor is on an episode. Like, he's live on an episode, was talking with Steve, and I thought, that is the coolest thing. And I thought, man, that means that anybody could just call into voicemail. And then they created Android App Addicts, and I just bought an Android phone. It was like absolute destiny. So I remember leaving them a voicemail, and I'll tell you what, I don't consider myself a very vain person, but I remember I was working this awful stocking job at a grocery store overnight. So, you know, graveyard shifts. I'm sitting there just hating life, you know, cutting boxes, throwing cans and boxes of this awful food onto these shelves. And then all of a sudden, this technology show, this podcast throws it to, you know, the email voicemail section. They go through a couple emails. They say, oh, we have a voicemail from Cody. Here it is. And then I hear my voice, and I threw my hands up. I stood up, and I was just like, oh, my God, yes, I got through. And I remember them thinking it was funny because I'm a funny guy, and I said something witty and hilarious, of course, as you know, you guys get it, during that voicemail. And look where I am today. I'll just say it there. And who knows? You might be the next Podnuts star if this were a talent search. Gosh, what if we did like open tryouts door, like Dancing with the Stars type of thing, or like America's Got Talent? Where can we coordinate that?
We did it. It was called Podnuts Meetup.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. That would be. We should talk offline. I got, like, man, these gears are turning now. Anyway, leave that voicemail. Once again, 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Keep it under 2 minutes if you can. We don't want to hear a novel, but we'd like to hear from you, the listeners of this great show. Dor, I know we can find you basically anywhere online, but what kind of parting words do you have for the folks here?
I want to thank everyone for their support. Thank everyone for their feedback. Every single email, I think, is just absolutely awesome. Every Podnutsian who communicates with us in any shape, way, or form, or supports us in any shape, way, or form, trust me when I say I will do everything to support you guys right back. Just keep the tweets coming. Keep posting on whatever your mechanism of choices about the show, and I hope to see you at a conference here soon.
Fantastic words. And what I would urge you to do is, and I've spoken about this before, but this is a more kind of more condensed version. Whenever you have something working for you in your life, whether it's a new organizational tool, weight loss plan, whatever, you really want to, you know, speak about it to the high heavens and really just, you know, get the word out. When it comes to, I will just keep a narrow focus here. When it comes to Linux, I used to be that way, but I'm not anymore. So what I would say is if you're a new user or if you're an experienced user who is now maybe in the position to get people to use Linux, what I'd ask you to do is try to figure out, well, basically, don't try to save anyone. Don't go out of your way to absolutely convert someone over. But work toward having tools at your disposal to introduce people to what you like about this experience. We were speaking earlier about the customization with window managers, and I mean, if you think about, you know, the options on top of options on top of options that we have with this experience, that is really one of its greatest strengths. That is customizable. However, there are options available for those who would like to be dropped into an environment and then tinker and then be in more control from there. And we'll speak about that on a future show. But what I'd ask you to do in the meantime is think about that person in your life that maybe might benefit. I mean, really benefit and be open to the introduction of Linux into their life and think about how it might benefit them. And then maybe try to nurture that relationship over the next 30, 60, 90 days. If you really think that it's someone that would benefit from it. I mean, we're not trying to just grow numbers here, but if you can honestly do that once or twice a year, or heck, once period, then we'll cultivate better relationships and you'll help to grow this community, which I think is the ultimate goal here. Thank you very much.
Oh yeah.
Thank you, Dor. Thank you very much again for listening. Man, stay cool out there. For those of you who are living in these hotter temperatures, stay hydrated, especially in between alcoholic beverages, and we will talk to you next time.
You mean like from a toilet?
Like from a toilet. I mean, if you're going to take a shot and then take a shower and then take a shot in a shower, that would work. But typically, you know, you're sipping on scotch, you're going to do a little bit of water in between, unless you're just like, I'm impervious to hangovers, which I am, but whatever. I'll play the fragile mortal and sip on a little bottle of water. But yeah, just be careful out there. And hey, you know what? Popsicles count as a liquid too. Think about it. Seriously, think about it.